Good morning, church family.
Good morning, Robert.
Morning, everybody. Kia ora tātou te whanau, mi atu kia. Ko te mihi tuataki te atua, nāna nei nā mea katoa i hanga. Ko te mihi tūro ki te maunga ki te awa me te whenua o tēnei rohi o te iwi nei, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou. Ki te whare e tūnei papa kei waho nā, tēnā kourua, tēnā kourua. E nā mate, haere, haere, haere atura. Ki te tātou kingi Māori a tūheitia, a tōna hō wahine me ara ua tamariki mokupuna, e mihi nui ki rātou pai mārere. A ka huri au ki nā kunui ora, ki a tātou te whānau a Grey Friars ko tama i tēnei wā, nō reira tēnā koutou tēnā tātou katoa. Uruaki tuku hā whakamālō ki he tui oi langi. Mālōlou mālia whanau konga. Oku mai i heni whakafonga atu a e tu i Māori kingitanga tū heitia. Ta taumo e tu i o konga i tu pōu. Oku au i heni ke whakaoko whātongia ki aki mautolu. Hono katoa peha kiha whamalita mai whaei. Kai tau te fito ki aki mautolu whanau. Ko e kū tamai o kukonga. Ki hoko mai hau a kautū, ke eke hau a whinangalo ke he laulo langi. Nā eke e he langi, says that your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Whakaue ke he atua, tukulangi, hākua whalewe ia fia fia, a tau tolu, he maha ango nei, whakalofalai atu ke he ulu, he tau tangata he motu nei, katoa mo e tau le lifo osi. E mumu lava ana sirve inga whaftaili atua na tātou mā futa whātasi nei temi, a meshi nei aso mo tamā, Lo sesunga whawhenai nga ia oi Ronlo Ese. A penau thoi ia oi Johanne, John, the ministers. Kia ora te whanau. Hey, what's up? Look at that. Don't get confused. I'm not speaking in tongues. I try to, but I don't speak in tongues in their context. Look, if you don't know me, I'm really nervous standing up here. Stop that. Nah. I've only got a small window of opportunity, so I want to capture that and grab it. That is where I am right now in my life, what I do for my job. I'm a registered social worker. I work out South Auckland for the county's Manukau District Health Board from Aruhu all the way down to Port Waikato. I go visit our whānau or people, anyone, Māori, Pasifika, Pākehā, to help them on their journey. And the beauty that I have from the theories that I've learnt, Western and Pacific and Indigenous, I apply the principles from the Bible. There's plenty of them at the back. It helps me on my journey when I help these people that I meet daily in my lives, and they say, or they show me their patch in the front, it says Mighty Mongol Mob, or they share with me that there used to be in the Killer Bees, or they share with me that they want to take their lives, or they share with me all these other things, and I always say in my mind, Lord, where am I heading with this? Lord, Father God, what do you want me to do? There is times where I'm at today in my life where I go, I get teary-eyed. I go, whoa, this is, for a bloke that is, it's like, whoa, it's making some tears come down. But I sit back and I reflect on this journey of mine and I think, I came out into this world crying, so we all came out crying. So I thought, maybe that's okay to cover this man bloke in me that's saying, why am I getting these funny feelings? But to share where I am in my walk and my testimony to you today in relating to Father's Day, that's what I do. 9 to 5, whatever you want to call it. But then there's also another role I do as a father at home and a wife that I got to please. I'll keep happy. So all that stuff is gone. So the message for you fathers, because like I said, I've got a small window of opportunity to capture the moment. I don't want to dishearten any fathers here today, or again upset those fathers that want to be. So I really want to encourage you to be strong in your walk, and that there is a true living God, and He's helped me on my journey. Go back, rewind back in 1967 on July the 9th, I don't know if it was the morning or daytime or whatever it was. A lovely lady, Apuniva Lokengi, my mother, gave birth to this. Look at that. Here I am standing before you. So that was 1967. And then this lovely young lad was raised and brought up. I think the words I found is a real hard upbringing. I shared to some of my families, they're saying, "I found out Samoa. Were you born in Samoa?" And I think they're trying to say, "Were you brought up in the harsh upbringing like we were?" And I say, "No, I was born here, but I can tell you this. The four walls in my house, I was brought up the teachings of my father, who he was taught from his father and his tupuna, his grandparents, and oh my gosh, if you watch, what is it? What's that documentary? The Pupu, the Orator. The Orator, it's not the rock shown there. It's got a little short midget. It just shows to me when I saw that, that was the teachings from my parents to try to do. They brought from Samoa to here and to help us on our journey in the Western world. In the Western world. So I was brought up probably a harsh upbringing. And where I am right now, my journey, I say, "Lord, why do I have to go through that? Why do I have to go through this?" But I see why. When I sit amongst family and friends that go through challenges, I do not quote or say I understand because I've read research that says this, this, this. Some of it I can say, I know what you're going through. I really do understand. So it was hard there. The six of us, I was the second in my family. There's four brothers, two sisters. So we were brought up and raised in Onehunga. And like I said, it was a bit harsh and challenging. Dad, who's still alive today, Dad loves the alcohol. No, he didn't come today, but he loves the alcohol, Dad. And I think that was his means and his measure to cope or to survive in his world and the life that he's in now. But through the teachings and that, it was very harsh, not just to us siblings, but also to our lovely mum who's passed on. And it was, you know, you hear about stories and it goes, "Oh, it's hard and all this," but I can truly say to you that for a father, that he loved us so much, that was his worldview and how he put us on our journey to help us to do well or to succeed. So, moving forward, grew up, I left school, I had the, if I was a different forum I'd say, but I didn't have the guts to ask my dad, so I told him straight, "Dad, I'm going to leave school." I struggled at school. When I look at it now in my journey, it was challenging to live a life and then to try and get it right and then to get go and get some credits, NCCA credits today. So I manned up, I said, "Dad, I'm going to go get a job, save your dollar, school C." Those days were called school C. And I was waiting for the fireworks, but it was good, didn't happen. Okay, go. So away I went. Dad had a saying, "Paddle your own canoe, paddle your own canoe." Dad was a fisherman. He didn't go to school. His dad will find him down the harbour on the wharf. He's fishing or getting makaupa. And he used to get his harsh teachings or discipline by his father. So I manned up. I left school. I worked in a factory in Penrose. I had a few factory jobs. I worked with mum. And I used to ride around, who those worked in the factory? And you got those pallet things like this. And I think I nearly got so many written warnings, but I used to race from this one, the thing slide like this. And I can hear my mum on the outside of the factory, "Little party," because my balangi boss, "Oh, bloody hell," going on and on. But so, anyways, and I think another time I jammed one of the operators' guillotine things. But anyways, I was a young lad then. While all that was happening, I said, I'm going to decide to do something, and I thought I'd go enlist into the New Zealand Army. I waited, and in the mailbox it came, and Dad held the letter. He didn't want me to go. I thought, oh. So I went down there, it was hard case. The third day down there in Wauru, ATG, I think it was the day, it was the Army Training Group, or then it became WTD, Wauru Training Depot. I went down there. The third day down there, I got called a nigger. What do you want, nigger? He said. I went, oh my gosh, I've seen these in movies or something. So I didn't move, I stood like this. And then I got a nudge. What do you want, nigger? He said. And I turned out his hard case. It was a little nigger Maori boy. He had two stripes nudging me. And he says, I'm watching you, boy. That night, I didn't sleep. I remember laying in the barracks. I look out the window and the snow was dropping in Wauru. I thought, if I go back to Auckland, it would be embarrassing to my family and all this other stuff. Anyways, I enjoyed it. I stayed there till, oh, I think 12, 13 odd years. So I did a bit of time. I didn't go any operations overseas. I also did a bit of security work as well. And then I left and I went with my lovely wife to Niue. She's Niuean. We spent 4 years in Niue. We came back. My lovely mum said this. You haven't been to Samoa. Why are you going to go to Niue? My wife wants me to. I didn't say that. I said, okay, mum, gotcha. She goes, yeah, arufa, let go. I'll give you the blessings and all this stuff. I went. I strongly believe this, that the Lord took me away from this other life or world that I was in. He probably thought, that's enough schooling in that area, let's upskill you on this one. So I went to Niue. It was Niue where I started my walk again with the Lord. I went there. I would go. There's only a few clubs on the rock, two. Saturday night, drunk. Oh, probably another word, intoxicated. And then I go to church, and these fellow Niueans had the shades on in the church. So the next Sunday, the Samoan goes in with his shades too. I would take my English Bible. Luckily, my wife's at work. My wife was at home. I didn't force her to come to church, but I started this journey by myself to go back to what my mum and dad brought up me in the church environment. And things happened from there. And then one child came to church and another one. It was so hard case, my two older ones. They missed the bus. I'd say, I'm going to church. I didn't force them. And then the mother would say, hurry up, go with your dad to church and all this stuff. And they'll drive off if they're running out. They were late. I'll leave them behind. But anyways, things happened from there. We came back to New Zealand. And a good friend of mine in New York said, what are you going to do when you go back? You're going to go back to the army? He said, nah. He says, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to do youth work. And I'm going to do security because it's nice, easy cash. You just smile and say, nah, you're drunk. Get lost. On the door, you know, nice, easy. I came back. The good Lord gave me that stuff. He gave me that. He also gave me a $32,000 scholarship to study social work. So I got a degree in social work, a diploma in social work. He really upskilled, fast-tracked me for only 3 years. I've been practicing, if that's the word they call it, for 3 years. Practice social work. Currently in South Auckland, I have two supervisees. On the national body, I've been on competency panels for social workers who want to be competent. I'm on two boards. I'm on three bodies for two social work bodies and one drug and alcohol body or these organisations. But what's so amazing and unbelievable for me in my heart is this, that the Lord, I can tell you this, and I declare truly, has put me there. When I look back and reflect where I've come through from my journey, I've got family and friends. Hey, did you do this? Have you got this? And I go, yeah. Are we having lunch yet? It's like he put me there, so when I go to homes where gangsters try to intimidate me or scare me, they don't. I think because where I've been, and the other thing is my armor is strong. My armor is strong. I will pull the Bible. I even got a kaumātua that rides with me. I said, kaumātua, we're going to Papakura. Nah, Black Power area, I don't go there at all. So anyways, when I rode with my kaumātua, I look at him, I said, do your Māori thing. And I can see by the eye look, because the patch is probably low. So I do my spiritual thing. I just really want to share that the Lord, Father God, the three in one, the Holy Spirit, the Father, Jesus Christ does exist. He lives. And it says that what we are to do is go out and spread the word. We had some songs today, the kids, to make fishers of men. That's what it's about. Now, in my practice, I fit that in, the beauty working of Raukura Hawaroa Tainui, the Māori King. The Kingitanga is this. Under spirituality, I can do that. I can fit that in. And also in Western theories, it comes in as well. Especially living here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, under Te Tiriti o Waitangi, the treaty, it allows us as Christian people in your workplace, in your workforce, to preach the word. Eh? If you aren't to it, you go stay within the boundaries. Can't touch me. So I love it. I enjoy it. I go out and I actually get paid to preach, to worship, sing songs, yahoo, and the beauty is we eat as well. Too many times. Eat, they call it on the pipe, where you sit in the front. I've gotten to the stage now in my life, in my work. Only 3 years, it's just too fast for me. I just move so fast. My supervisor said to me, Robert, you're climbing so fast. He's like, how long have you been? I said, oh, stop it. But I think because where the Lord has put me, my upbringing, I go, why did I go through that? And then I know, for example, there's one incident. I went to this house out West Auckland, and you could tell something's going down because all the neighbours are going like this. And I said, oh, no, because sometimes I'm in a place now. Are you a social worker? Can you help me? And they come with all this stuff. Turn up, and in a few seconds I got out, two I-cars, police vehicles come around the corner doing their stuff. I said, hey, brothers, are you going to that house? And they gave me their real kopolo. Who are you and what? I go, oh, sorry then. So I head in that direction and they look, oh, yeah, that's the address. Before we went there, they told me, oh, they're here for a domestic job. I said, oh, cool. What comes to me straight away is, please stop locking up our people or anyone. They need to hear the word first. So I quickly went in there first. In the middle, I think, to be safe practice, I was waiting for the policeman to say, excuse me, stand back, we'll take it from here. So I sort of put myself in the middle. I walked into the house. Unfortunately, it was a Samoan house. I saw the suitcases outside, and then I just said to the kids, Ofirko, you know, where, you know. And then the mum saw me, and she went, oh, yeah, why? And I went, just calm it down. So I said, Ofirko, you know, and there he was. And the ko inga means, where's the dad? Hey. And then the dad saw me, he smiled. And then I saw his eyes glance to the right, he didn't smile. Then he said this to me in French, Samoan. He said this, hey, like video little, and he was angry. He said to me, hey, did you ring the police? And he started to do the Hulk Hogan stuff. So I said, oh. I said, Chama, dad, come. So I walk in the house, come, and I took him away. The reason why I didn't want, he had six kids. These kids had to pull off, or this family had to pull off their court directive and this. They got it wrong. They're going to pull the other three kids, sisters, will take over. So anyways, I went in there through my gut feeling, through the spirit and my armor, and practicing safe. I went straight in there. I said, come. I took him to a safe place in his lounge. He said, sit down. I said, look at me, because he was looking at these cops, he's getting old. And Mr. Policeman, probably how they trained down the college like this, in the lounge. I thought, mate, cars, come back later. But I sat there, and he calmed down, and he just let it all out. I said, oh. And it was all over a cell phone or something. So while he was doing that, I just went this to the two boys that I was supposed to be there at school. And they took off, but they didn't go to school. Then I got asked by the officer, can you come help and take him down to the station? So I said, yeah, I'll help you. So I took him down to the station. Got right at the back, hard case. I tried my luck. The barrier arm goes up, followed up behind. And the copper says, you got to go around the front. A little far out. So I went in there. Poor dad got locked up. He stayed there. I came back and I came back, did prayer to the family, found out prayer for mum. And the following morning, I went back and I followed up daddy at the pier at court. I made out, I went there for something else, but they were going to catch their bus back. I said, jump in the car. Then I asked for it then, because then it was like, the son didn't have a license. He wanted him to drive all this other illegal talk. And I said, no, stop. And I had to pull his papers on the court. I said, you couldn't go back there. You're not allowed to. But every time we spoke, everything we did, I planted the teachings of us as Pacifica people, as Samoan, was the treasures of a father for our kids, the treasures of his wife, the treasures of, hey, don't do neck minute stuff. And it was so good that their family managed to, they completed their matters with the justice system. And that's just one of my lovely nice stories. There's some that neck minute stories, but that's fine. Hey, that's fine. I'm still here. That's it in a nutshell of who I am. I could go deeper in the stuff, but we don't have the time. But if I go deeper in the stuff, you probably hate me. But I know that good loving God, he's a loving God. He forgives us. He loves us so much. I've got three daughters, and it's good. My eldest girl has come in. My son-in-law and my grandchildren. I've got two grandchildren. My lovely wife, I'm sure she was supposed to be off today, but she swapped with a colleague so he could share his Father's Day. We discussed it, and I said, do that. So I have four children, two grandchildren. And it's so good that we try. It is challenging out there for a dad, as males out there, that the world is full of challenges. And it's how we be focused and be strong. Remember, it's not our will, it's his will. And you work together, one, you will see your partner more and your kids through the Lord. We will see those things. I'd like to acknowledge, when I opened up, a mihi is a kōrero, just to support what I was about to speak or what I have spoken on. And it's just what I do to allow comfort or warming into the families that I go into and see. And you notice it's mainly the Samoan and the Māori one that I'm strong on, because they're probably the ones that are most incarcerated in our prisons today. So that sort of helps them relax and to work alongside me, some of them. Thank you for the opportunity to speak, Reverend, our church members. If you see me floating about and you think I'm fluffing around, there's a lot going on in my head. So I try and help out our church where I best can. I thank you for our reverence for supporting me in my journey. And also my journey is really Mr. Reverend Ron Lowesi, who's helped me on my journey and guided me. It's nearing the end. I was supposed to go do counselling. That was my aim and vision when I first started off in this game, working with kids that have been kicked out of two or three mainstream schools. But through Ron's support and the guidance through him teaching me to know the Bible more and understanding it has allowed me to be who I am and where I stand today. I argue with policemen, I argue with doctors for what I believe the well-being of people with Indigenous values, people with their worldview, and people for the reason why they do things and why they're like that in behavioural. So I'd like to thank you again for the opportunity. God bless all the fathers, all the mothers and the children. Look after your dads and the mums, because they come together in a package, and do well. And God bless us all. Iman wheel tatu us all.
Thanks, Robert. Can you see the screen from there? I could sneak. I'll sneak over here so I can peek and talk at the same time. Because it's Father's Day and I'm supposed to be giving a testimony, I'll give you my one word of advice for fathers, and you'll probably think I'm nuts. That the word of advice for dads is that your job at home is to read a bedtime story, not once a month, not once a week, every night. If you start reading your kids a bedtime story, you'll get a much better reader, and your children will have a love for books, which will do them in good stead in life. I'm a fully qualified nerd, and I'm going to give you a bit of a nerd's eye view on God the Father. When I was about 12, it occurred to me that there was a God, and I've never doubted it since. And the reason is quite simple. I'm prepared to accept that life started from two amoeba swimming through space. I'm prepared to accept that they might have bumped into each other and held hands and become a frog. I can accept that becoming a frog, they became an ape, and becoming an ape, they became a human. But at 12, no one could explain to me where the two amoeba came from, and they still can't. I was quite upset a little while ago when there was a whole lot of news in the media about God in schools. And what really upset me about it was the comments by the parents in the media. Comments like, how stupid are Christians to believe in fairy tales? We want our children to be taught facts, not myths. I honestly can't understand how ignorant some parents are who are making comments like that. And what I wanted to talk about briefly, well, you'll see what I want to talk about briefly. There's a feeling out there that science and Christianity doesn't mix, that they're two polar opposites. If you believe in science, you don't believe in God. If you believe in God, you don't believe in science. And that's nonsense. If you Google how many Nobel Prize winners believe in God, yahooanswers.com will tell you the answer is 0.000000%. And they'll mark that answer 5 out of 5 stars for accuracy, and it's marked cool. And it's completely wrong. If you research how many Nobel Prize-winning scientists believe in God, you'll find the answer somewhere between 50 and 92%. Now, I was going to give you a list, but it would take too long, so I'm not going to. Trust me. God is not afraid of the truth, and we shouldn't be either. It occurs to me that religion and science are looking at the same problem. Scientists are looking at the footprints of God, and religion is trying to understand God's character. The startling thing is the only reason science works, the only reason it works, is because the universe follows an intricate set of rules. The universe runs like clockwork. Let's look at clocks. Up until 1967, all the world's clocks were set by observed motion of the earth and the heaven. Naval astronomers observed those motions and set all of our clocks precisely relative to that. Who set the heavens in motion, and why are they so accurate? In 1967, scientists built an atomic clock made from cesium-133 atoms. They oscillate at 9,192,631,770 times per second. They don't oscillate at 9,192,631,771 times a second. They do it at 770 times per second. Okay, it's not going to work. That clock is accurate to 1 second in 30 million years. They've now spent a bit more time and they've figured out that mercury ions vibrate a little bit more precisely, and they can use light to measure time now so that the clock only slips by 1 second in every 30 billion years. None of them seem to ask the question, why is the universe so regular? The second law of thermodynamics states that the universe tends from order to disorder. For the children here, what that means is your bedroom always turns from tidy to messy. And the same is true with the universe. And yet, when the universe started, it went from nothing to incredible order. If we threw a bomb into this room, what are the chances that we'd get a clock that ticks so precisely that it misses a second once in every 30 billion years? The other question they don't seem to ask is, if the universe was wound up and let go, who wound it up? Okay. What do we know about the universe? Scientists have studied the universe, believe it or not, and they've looked at the stars and they've watched the stars travel. They can measure what direction a star is traveling and how fast it's traveling. And the interesting thing is, if you follow the trajectory, they all come from the same spot. So scientists now accept that the whole of the universe started from one point in space.